All right, Stacey Keach, get your Mike Hammer outfit on, because there's a new case for you, the disappearing DVD. All right, well, maybe it's not worth a Mike Hammer episode, but I haven't said Stacey Keach in a while, and it just feels good to say, you know. But really, we've all lost shit before in our homes and apartments and been like, I just had the fucking thing. I've been to, like, two rooms. Where in the hell did I put that thing? And my apartment is, like, 400 square feet, so I really don't have much space to lose anything. I've thrown away a few things in the past, most notably my fucking expensive night guard for my teeth 3 times, and I've thrown my keys away before in my garbage, but I was able to locate them before I took the trash out, luckily. And yes, we've all magically lost a sock or an item of clothing. I literally have a favorite pair of socks, and somewhere between the washer and the dryer, I lost one of them. And I still have that one single sock in my closet sitting there mocking me. I mean, I know the sock is somewhere. I'm not David Copperfield or some shit. It's probably nestled in a shirt or something, but I have done a pretty exhaustive search of my apartment, and I haven't been able to find the fucking thing. And whenever I do end up moving out of Sunnyvale, I know it will turn up. But when shit does go missing, it's like, okay, what in the fuck? Where the hell is it? You retrace your steps. You're like, okay, I walked to the washer and the dryer and maybe took a piss. So unless I flush the sock down the toilet, where the hell are you? But anyway, back to the disappearing DVD. So I love trying to find like ultra random ass movies that I've never seen. Every once in a while I hit pay dirt. And I love searching for like weird 80s and 90s thrillers or detective movies. What did Jean-Luc Godard supposedly say? All you need to make a movie is a girl and a gun. Godard, I guess, attributed the concept to D.W. Griffith. But anyway, I was looking up film noirs to try and find something I hadn't seen. For some reason, I looked up Double Indemnity, fuck that word, the unmissable 1944 Billy Wilder masterpiece with Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck, holy shit, I'm having trouble today, and Edward G. Robinson. McMurray is a nerdy insurance salesman who gets roped into a scheme to kill Stanwyck's husband. And it's funny, I was at my mom's the other day and I was trying to remember Edward G. Robinson's name and I kept saying Eugene Robinson. I mean, that's pretty close. But anyway, he's a pretty good Washington Post columnist. Okay, back to Double Indemnity. I saw something about a 1973 version and I was like, what in the hell is this? And I guess there was a made-for-TV version of Double Indemnity in 1973 with Richard Crenna, Samantha Eggar, and Lee J. Cobb. He plays the Edward G. Robinson character. I guess they were contractually obligated to hire an actor to play that part who has a middle initial. The TV movie got decent reviews. It was directed by Jack Smite, a pro director who also did the cool movie Harper from 1966 with a great-looking Paul Newman as private eye Lou Harper. So anyway, the only place that had this TV movie was some random website I've bought movies from before. Probably the guy has had like the movies on VHS and he's transferred them to DVD, so it was like $25. I was like, okay, no big deal. I got it in the mail a couple weeks ago, stuck it on top of my backpack, which I take to my mom's when I visit. And I was like planning on visiting my mom like a week later and we were going to watch it. So cut to the night before, I'm going to my mom's, I'm packing, and I'm like, okay, there's the backpack, where's that fucking DVD? I mean, I know I didn't move the backpack or DVD at any time since I put the DVD on it. So I emptied the backpack. It has a bunch of magazines and stuff in it. Maybe it got stuck in a magazine, but no luck. I kind of looked around my place. I couldn't find anything. And while my memory can play tricks on me, I know I hadn't moved that DVD anywhere. So I was just frustrated. I mean, unless I ate the fucking DVD while I was high, then it straight up disappeared. And I was looking forward to watching that movie with my mom. I mean, first off, who is going to buy a 1973 version of Double Indemnity with Richard Crenna? And it's fucking lost, no doubt. So now I am without a doubt the only person on the entire planet that has bought the 1973 TV version of Double Indemnity twice. Yes, my dumbass just bought another one. But this time I'm having it delivered to my mom's. We'll watch it like Christmas week. But I did tell my mom, hey, if it gets delivered to you and it gets lost, then she has to buy the third one. So for now, Stacey Keach, stand back and stand by. Your services may be needed in the future, but for now, have a whiskey on me. And I came up with a couple lines of dialogue for a couple movies. I believe I came up with these slightly inebriated, so don't go expecting Patty Chayefsky or something. But scene one, kind of a Jack Nicholson character, says, "You know, one of these days I'm gonna get sober. Stop drinking, stop all this shit. Just not today." Okay, scene two, a businessman. Maybe picture William Holden. He walks into his office, rumpled, bleary-eyed, and his secretary, maybe picture Janet Leigh, says, "Oh, honey, you're even starting to look like a drunk." Okay, on this episode, a couple cool movies, The Beauty of Playlists, and some talk on beliefs. And maybe Leif Garrett. Nah, we'll save him for another time.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, briefly, I don't feel like ranting on the evils of technology or the idiots of Silicon Valley. Let's save that for another episode. But I'm sure you've heard all the recent advertisements for Instagram teen accounts where you can block your teen from accessing certain functions of Instagram or whatever. Well, A, kids will find a way to get around this roadblock. Kids are way more technologically advanced than their parents. Every time I go to my mom, she has some technological issue, and usually it's like, well, first off, the thing isn't plugged in. No, I'm kidding. She's not that bad. But B, and more importantly, it's a little late in the fucking game you start thinking about the well-being of teenagers and technology, you fucking morons. The cat is out of the bag. You've already wrecked the minds, the lives, and the well-being of not only kids, but everyone else that uses this technology, which is basically everyone. Everyone's on their phone. No one knows how to communicate with each other. It's rare to actually have phone conversations with anyone. Everything is through text, not to mention the porn, the violence, the harassment, and the bullying online. I mean, kids have killed themselves because of things that have happened to them online. It's like, you know when there should have been some guardrails put in? It's when you started the shit. Yes, you, Mark Zuckerberg, with Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Rather than just trying to grow your business and your millions and billions and not worry about the consequences. And as I've said before, if there's only even been one kid, and there have been several, that killed themselves because of some content on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever, then the entire experiment has been a complete fucking failure. Yes, people committed suicide and were harassed before the internet, of course. But now the whole thing is on hyperdrive. And the somewhat anonymity of the internet brings out the nastiest and cruelest parts of humanity. I mean, I just read about some site where people are encouraged to kill themselves from others and to live stream it or whatever. So Silicon Valley, you fucking blew it and you continue to blow it. And Mark Zuckerberg, fucking cut your hair and start wearing normal clothes again. You look like a complete idiot. I know there is still a lot of decent people around these days, but I swear sometimes I have my doubts. And this was going to be a somewhat longer episode. Let's see how long I can go. I have a cold or some kind of bug, but hey, I work at a hospital. What do I expect? When John Dillinger was asked why he robbed banks, he said, "That's where the money is." And if someone asks me why I get sick so often, I guess I should say, "I work at a hospital. That's where all the viruses are." Well, my quote isn't as catchy, mind you, but it works. Get it? Not as catchy. Sometimes I even impress myself, if no one else. So besides watching movies, I listen to a shit ton of music. And I do hate the idea of Spotify. I preferred buying records and CDs and reading music magazines and listening to college radio to find music. But Spotify is a necessary evil. I gave in several years ago. Sometimes you have to deal with the devil. But I do kind of find their end-of-year playlists interesting. They tell you the songs you mainly listen to in 1 year, and they rank them in listening order. And to me, I can kind of look back at the playlist and kind of immediately see what kind of year I was having for the music I was listening to. And the year-end playlist is kind of a soundtrack for that year of my life. It's like, oh, okay, 2017, Britney Spears was listened to a lot. Oh, yeah, I was going out with that girl in nursing school, and we always listened to that thing. And in 2018, I was a mess. We had broken up. Mind you, it was a very short relationship, but I was just kind of lost, lonely, heartbroken, and doing a lot of bad stuff. And Chris Cornell's Follow My Way was near the top of that list, because that year I spent endless hours, besides abusing myself, going on epic long walks, and that was the song I listened to on repeat. Again, thank you, Chris Cornell, and rest in peace. This year's playlist had Jim Morrison's A Feast of Friends as my number one song. I won't get into the details why that was my number one, but let's just say I did my fair share of breaking on through. I put my 2024 playlist on the links down there just in case anyone is interested. It's generally catchy songs, some dark stuff, but generally stuff with some hooks in it. Okay, on to a few movies. I watched Beetlejuice with my mom. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it just kind of felt kind of unnecessary. I mean, there was some clever stuff. I laughed a few times. Michael Keaton is always great. Jenna Malone is a little morose for my tastes. Justin Theroux just kind of seems like a douche to me in real life, so it's hard for me to watch him. And Winona Ryder kind of acts and looks these days like she's constipated. Get that woman some Maalox. But yeah, the movie was a somewhat not-inspired rehash of the first one, and like I said, it's not terrible, it's watchable. But at the end of it, I was just like, they really didn't need to make that. Now, I love any kind of noir, mystery shit with a down-on-his-luck sad sack lead character, and I really like the new slow burn Lake George with just a great Shea Whigham. You'll recognize him when you see him. And Carrie Coon. Speaking of Justin Theroux, I love the TV show she was in with him called The Leftovers. God, what a great musical score by Max Richter. And if you only watch one episode, watch the very last one. It kind of stands alone on its own. It's about aging, heartbreak, finding your true love. I mean, the last episode blew me away. But anyway, Lake George is about this kind of in-over-his-head misfit who's released from prison, and this criminal boss of Glendale, fucking Glendale, I love it, tells him he owes a favor, and he hires him to kill his kind of kooky ex-girlfriend played by Carrie Coon. Of course, he can't bring himself to kill her. They end up teaming up, and they hatch a plan to steal some money from the criminal boss. I mean, Shea is just awesome, just a weary hangdog but likable guy. Carrie plays an energetic, funny, kind of ballsy weirdo, and man, it really comes together. It's slow, but it's got a great heart. It's kind of eccentric, and it's really a must-see if you like that type of thing. Now, a new movie on Netflix is also definitely a fun time. It's called Carry On with Taron Egerton. He was in those Kingsman's movies, and he also played Elton John in 2019's Rocket Man. It's got Jason Bateman effectively playing our villain. And you'll never convince me Jason Bateman hasn't had a serious hair transplant, but whatever. The movie is directed by Jaume Collet-Serra. He's directed a bunch of fairly fun Liam Neeson action movies. Anyway, Carry On is definitely a diehard ripoff, but it's fun, dumb, and well done, enjoyable, some thrills, kind of a great little idea for a plot. It's a tad too long, but shit, it's worth a watch. It feels kind of old-fashioned, but it's just a well-done, simple idea, nicely executed. I wasn't expecting much, but I kind of loved it from beginning to end. Okay, to close, I was thinking about truth and belief and whatnot the other day. And yes, I do think there are certain truths, even though it seems like we've reached the point of post-truth or like alternative facts. We don't seem to trust our institutions anymore. Sometimes we don't trust the other people or even the things we see in front of our own eyes. But it got me thinking on maybe the two biggest questions there are in this life. Is there a God? And what happens to us when we die? And I guess those two questions are related. And yes, there have been advances in science and technology. There are some smart, evolved people out there. And there's also a bunch of dumb shits who the masses think are smart, evolved people. But ultimately, not one single person on this entire fucking planet, think about that, not one, knows for a fact that there is a God. Or that there isn't a God. Or what happens when we die. Not the Pope. Nope. Not the Dalai Lama, not your mama's boyfriend, yes, I went there, and not Richard Gere. Richard Gere, what? I mean, people have their strong beliefs and their faiths and all that, and hey, I'm all for whatever brings you comfort and whatever gets you through the day, whether that's movies or church or taking drugs, it's not for me to judge. But nobody truly knows shit about the biggest questions, and you know what? That kind of gives me comfort. We're all on the same playing field, and none of us will find out till the end. I myself subscribe to the tenets of the Church of Mark. Number one, try to be nice to people and help others out. Number two, try to have fun. And number three, you may harm yourself, but you may not harm others. And some millionaire asshole knows nothing more about the meaning of life than a homeless person. In fact, a homeless person may honestly have more insight on that, to be honest. But we're all clueless, really, lumbering about, trying to make the most of it, trying to have some fun, trying to meet someone, trying to find ways to get through the day, trying to reduce the soul-crushing loneliness at times of it all. And when someone says, Yes, I know that for sure. Well, yes, there are facts. But for those things that are beliefs, sometimes you just have to say, I don't know. People don't say, I don't know often enough. I mean, it can be a refreshing answer. It may not be what you want to hear, but at least it's honest. It's like, do you love me? I don't know. Am I going to survive this? I don't know. I mean, I hope so, but I don't know. Is there a God? What happens when we die? I mean, this is what I think, but I don't know. And usually when I'm rambling on some topic, I will give my long-winded opinions on something, and then I will usually end it with, but man, I don't fucking know. Like Dirty Harry says in 1973's Magnum Force, a man's got to know his limitations.